Before we ooze onward, my delightful decaying friends, leave a like with your rot-swollen fingers. Subscribe for more of Grandfather Nurgle's blessings and stir the cauldron of hype. In the comments, tell us which Chaos God has claimed your moldy heart, and why.
Grandfather Nurgle loves you. At least, that's the lie you've been told. In the grim darkness of the far future, where despair runs rampant and hope is a fading memory, some poor souls cling to the notion that a bloated, pestilence-ridden god actually cares for them. They whisper that Papa Nurgle, the great lord of decay himself, offers comfort, acceptance, even love to those cast aside by every other power. After all, he accepts all, no matter how diseased or despondent. He cradles the sick, shelters the forlorn, and blesses them with his gifts. How benevolent, right? Wrong. It's a sick joke, literally. The truth is that Nurgle doesn't love you at all. Nurgle hates you. He hates everything about you that is alive and pure. And he delights in reducing it to filth. His so-called love is nothing more than a poisoned candy coating on a cyanide pill. Once you swallow it, you'll taste only rot beneath the sweetness. Let's peel back the scab and look at what's really going on. Who is Nurgle? To the uninitiated Nurgle, also known as the Plague Lord, the Great Corruptor, the Fly Lord, and a dozen other charming titles, is one of the four Chaos Gods of Warhammer 40,000. He is the immortal embodiment of disease, decay, and despair. Every plague that has ever festered, every pox that has ever oozed, every moment of hopeless resignation in the face of mortality, all of that empowers Nurgle. Legend has it that as the Black Death ravaged ancient Terra, our old Earth, in the Middle Ages, the psychic scream of all that fear and suffering in the warp birthed something foul and laughing. Nurgle's first emergence. He's been giggling at mortal misery ever since. Despair is Nurgle's meat and mead. While Tsinch draws strength from hope and change, Nurgle draws strength from hopelessness and stagnation. Wherever creatures are stricken with the fear of death, that primal terror clutching your heart when disease blackens your blood and the grave yawns open, Nurgle grows powerful. He is the cosmic vulture perched on the shoulders of every dying man, thriving on those final pleas and the surrender to fate. In a galaxy perpetually at war, there is no shortage of despair. And Nurgle laps it up, grinning all the while. Now, if that paints a picture of a grim reaper figure, eternally morose, understand that Nurgle is anything but somber. No, the plague god is perversely jolly. Picture a massive, boil-covered, fly-infested Santa Claus who hands out infections instead of toys. His followers affectionately call him Grandfather Nurgle because he projects a hideous paternal persona. It's grotesque. A gargantuan being whose skin is greenish leather, sloughing off in places to reveal pulsing maggots beneath, whose exposed intestines spill out like a sack of rotten gifts, who is attended by giggling little demon cherubs called Nurglings that slurp the pus from his sores. And this monstrosity coos and chuckles with an almost grandfatherly warmth, even as he concocts the next planet-killing plague in his rusted cauldron. It's an obscene parody of a loving patriarch, yet incredibly some fools praise him for his kindness. Yes, Nurgle's worshippers genuinely call him father and grandfather. They insist he is endlessly forgiving and inclusive. Why? Because from their perspective, Nurgle is the only god who accepts them as they are, warts, lesions, and all. In the rotten family of Nurgle, no one is judged for being ugly, sick, or weak. In a cruel cosmos that prizes strength, perfection, or cunning, Nurgle's embrace is, supposedly, warm and unconditional. the leper, the outcast, the plague-ridden beggar in the alley, all are welcome in Nurgle's arms when no one else will have them. It's the ultimate cosmic open-door policy. That, at least, is the sales pitch. But like any sleazy sales pitch, there's nasty fine print. Sure, Nurgle accepts you, in the same way the ocean accepts a drowning man. Join his festering family, and you will indeed cease to feel alone or afraid. But that's not because you are loved. It's because you've been chemically lobotomized by pure despair and disease. Nurgle's is gift often takes away your fear and pain by literally rotting the nerves out of your body and dulling your mind into a stupor of weird contentment. He doesn't uplift you. He drags you down so far into the muck that you no longer recognize what you've lost. Think about it. The plague, God's idea of mercy, is to make you enjoy your own decay. His followers actually laugh gleefully while their flesh sloughs off in stinking sheets. They sing cheerful hymns, bubotic nursery rhymes, really, while pus dribbles from their eye sockets. Outsiders look on in horror as these lunatics dance amid plague outbreaks, mistaking their mania for joy. Nurgle's champions exhibit that morbid cheerfulness, but it's not true happiness. It's the delirium of souls broken by suffering until suffering became comfort. It's the final coping mechanism of minds that have abandoned hope. Let's illustrate this twisted dynamic more clearly. Imagine, if you will, a common man of the Imperium, call him Joan, a factory worker in some squalid hive city. All his life, Joan has known nothing but drudgery and hunger under the oppressive rule of the Imperium. Then one day, an outbreak strikes his district, a plague unlike any seen before. People's skin erupts in green-black boils, their lungs fill with bloody phlegm. The medici have no cure. Within days, Johan's wife and children are on death's door, and he himself feels the fever burning in his veins. He pleads with the local medici, but they have no cure. The hospitals are overrun, and the doctors soon fall ill themselves. In his desperation, Johan lights a candle at a shrine to the God Emperor, praying for a miracle, but is met only with silence. All around him, the corpses pile up, and the air hangs thick with the sweet-sour stink of rot. The planetary authorities seal off his district and abandon it. No help is coming for Joan or his loved ones. He sinks to his knees in utter despair. And that's when Johan hears it. A wet, gentle chuckle from the darkness and a grandfatherly voice in his mind. "Why so sad, my child?" The voice is strangely comforting, almost warm, despite the gargling phlegm underlying it. Johan is desperate enough to answer, "Because I don't want to lose my family. I don't want to die." "Poor soul," coos the voice. "I can take all that pain away. I can save you from fear and suffering. Grandfather can make it all better." As Joan listens, the voice promises what the uncaring Imperium never would. Relief, not just for him, but for his ailing loved ones, too. It promises to take away the pain, to hold him close, no matter what. In that moment, kneeling in filth and sorrow, Joan agrees. What choice does he have left? He calls out in a cracked voice, "Yes, please, help us." Those are the last words he speaks as a man with free will, because Nurgle keeps his promise in the cruelest way. Johan's pain does ebb. The fever roasting him cools, his bloodshot eyes clear. He stands up, strangely invigorated. Across the room, his dying daughter sits up too, giggling through cracked, bleeding lips. Johan's wife, moments ago writhing in agony, is now eerily calm as open sores spread across her body. The family looks at each other. Their skin is mottled with dripping lesions, their eyes sunken and shining with sickly green light, and an odor of rot wafts from them. But they feel good, No more pain, no more fear, just a curious, light-headed euphoria. They start laughing, a wet, hacking laugh. They feel, for the first time in ages, happy. Outside their hab, the hive is descending into chaos. Those afflicted by the plague are undergoing the same hideous miracle. The streets fill with people grinning through tumorous masks of boils. Some dance and caper, others weep in ecstasy, because the crushing terror is gone. The healthy citizens, the ones not yet infected, watch in absolute dread as neighbors they'd known for years suddenly behave like deranged revelers in a charnel house. Johan doesn't care about the healthy onlookers anymore. In fact, he regards them with a new sense of pity and hunger. They still look frightened. They haven't been blessed yet. Grandfather Nurgle loves them too, doesn't he? The thought trickles through Johan's corrupted mind, spread the gift. Yes, of course. How selfish he was, hoarding grandfather's love for his family alone. With a wide, cracked smile, Johan shambles toward his nearest terrified neighbor, arms outstretched for a reassuring embrace, one that will pass on the infection now coursing through his veins, as dozens of plague-drenched converts like Johan close in on the remaining healthy citizens of that hive sector. You can almost hear Nurgle himself wheezing with laughter beyond the veil of reality. That is Nurgle's love. Does it still sound like love to you, or does it sound like a nightmare euphemistically called mercy? In one fell swoop, Nurgle turned a man's desperate prayer for salvation into a sentence of living death. Not just for him, but for everyone he cared about. Johan and his family aren't healed. They're hollowed out. They're infectious puppets now, their souls drowned in the sludge of Nurgle's power. They aren't feeling true joy. They're exhibiting the manic bliss of the deranged, spread by a disease that destroys higher thought and fear. It's basically a warped, supernatural drug high being sold as enlightenment. This is how Nurgle operates, time and again. He inflicts suffering, then offers a way to numb that suffering. It's the oldest con in the chaos playbook. Cause the disease, then sell the cure, which isn't a cure at all, just a different kind of affliction. In Johan's case, who unleashed that plague in the first place? There's a very high chance it was Nurgle's doing from the start. That mysterious outbreak was likely one of his countless engineered contagions, perhaps carried into the hive by a cultist or bubbling up from some warp-tainted sewer. It's entirely possible that before Nurgle saved Johenti's family, he was the one who condemned them with the illness. If that sounds insane and cruel, welcome to chaos. Nurgle the Protector is often just Nurgle the Poisoner, wearing a kindly mask. He does this on a civilization-wide scale, too. Entire planetary populations have been played like this. First comes a wave of poxes and blights. Crops wither with blight. Drinking water turns to filth. A mysterious sickness spreads that no medicase or tech priest can understand. As billions start dying in misery, cultists begin preaching. Grandfather Nurgle offers deliverance. Embrace the rot and be freed from pain. On some doomed worlds, the despair is so overwhelming that huge portions of the population, from underhive scum to planetary nobles, give in to that temptation. They throw open their city gates to Nurgle's legion. Or worse, they drink tainted elixir and pray for corruption. And Nurgle answers. Those worlds fall into a fate worse than death, not peacefully, but in an orgy of decay. What rises from the ashes are plague zombies and mutants dancing under bloated, pus-filled suns, mocking every ideal of human dignity that existed before. Any survivors who refused Nurgle's bargain are likely devoured by those who accepted it. Grandfather's family reunion tends to be murderously inclusive. In fact, since the catastrophic opening of the Great Rift, the influence of Chaos, and thus Nurgle, has grown so intense that sometimes despair alone is enough to trigger a plague outbreak. Imperial records tell of cases where communities beset by war and sickness simply lost all hope, and at that moment, they spontaneously transformed into poxwalkers, plague-ridden zombies, without any direct infection. It's as if merely surrendering to despair sends an invitation to Nurgle's power, and he answers by remaking you into one of his mindless, pestilent thralls. In other words, simply giving up can kill you in Nurgle's galaxy, or worse, twist you into a walking plague. Despair itself becomes a death sentence, illustrating how literally Nurgle weaponizes hopelessness. Let's not mince words. Nurgle's love is a weapon. It is a toxin brewed for the mind and soul. It takes your worst fears, death, pain, loss, and says, "Give up, and I will take those away." And it does, but only by making you part of the cause of those fears for others. You stop fearing death because you become death incarnate, spreading plague to everyone else. You stop feeling pain because you become a numb, walking corpse, spreading misery while barely aware of your own. You no longer fear loss because you've already lost everything that made you who you were, being content to wallow in filth. How convenient for Nurgle that your new bliss also means you serve his agenda perfectly. He gets an obedient vector to propagate his plagues, and you get to shuffle along thinking this was your salvation. He's effectively converting you into a bioweapon that's happy about its lot. If this is love, it's the kind only a truly twisted, abusive being could give. In fact, one of the best descriptions I've heard is, "Nurgle loves you like an abusive parent loves their child." That is, in a way that ruins you, traps you, and ensures you can never leave. It's possessive, smothering, and ultimately destructive. Consider the fate of those most devoted to Nurgle. Let's talk about Nurgle's gifts for a moment, because this highlights how he actually hates you. The Plague God is proud of the diseases he creates. They're his art form, and when a follower pleases him, what does he give as a reward? Another disease? Perhaps a dozen? Maybe a lovely new parasite that burrows under your skin, or a delightful fungus blooming in your lungs? Your body might warp in interesting ways. An extra mouth here, a tentacle there, dripping slime. These are Nurgle's blessings. His champions wear their plagues like medals. Early on, a cultist might even be glad to receive a gift. "Grandfather blessed me. I no longer catch a fever, and my wounds don't even hurt," they'll cheer. Sure, one veteran plague marine once exulted, "In the embrace of great Nurgle, I am no longer afraid, for with his pestilential favor, I have become that which I once most feared, death." To him, this was a triumph. He believed he had overcome fear by becoming the very embodiment of death itself. But really, it only meant Nurgle stripped away everything from him except the ability to kill. A grim bargain, painted as a blessing. But as time goes on, the burden grows. That cultist accumulates more infections, more tumors. Their body bloats and ruptures. Eventually, they're a shambolic heap of pox and bile, held together only by willpower and dark magic. The jokes stop being funny. Maybe they can barely even shamble or think through the pus clogging their brain. At that point, the servant might beg Nurgle, "Please, Grandfather, this gift is too much to bear. I can't see. My entrails are dragging on the ground. Please take this affliction away." What does Nurgle do? Laughs. Maybe he even finds the plea adorable in its pathetic audacity. Remove the gift? Oh no, child, have another. Perhaps Nurgle will grant the supplicant a swarm of biting flies nesting in what's left of their belly, just to see how long they can endure this new blessing. "Grandfather is testing your endurance, you see, After all, one of his mottos, if Chaos had mottos, is that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? So if a gift hasn't killed you yet, clearly you can handle a bit more. Nurgle revels in this perverse sport. It's documented in Traitor Legion lore that Nurgle's followers suffer under the weight of his gifts, as much as they benefit from them. These boons often take the form of repulsive diseases and hideous deformations which, while useful for spreading Nurgle's contagions, may well kill the carrier eventually. Frequently, the servants of Nurgle realize too late that they've invited torment in exchange for short-term solace. But by then, there's no way out. Once Nurgle's gangrenous claws are on your soul, you belong to him, in life and beyond death. Beyond death? Yes. There is no rest, no final release from Nurgle's love. Did you know that if you die from Nurgle's rot, one of his trademark diseases, your soul doesn't receive the Emperor's peace or even the quiet oblivion of true death? It becomes a plague-bearer, a demon enslaved to Nurgle's service. That's right. Those lumbering, one-eyed lesser demons with rusty swords and monotone voices tallying the plagued, each one was once a mortal who succumbed to Nurgle's rot. In their last moments, perhaps they prayed to Nurgle, or perhaps they cursed him. It matters not. Nurgle claimed them anyway. Now they spend eternity as part of his horde, mindlessly counting diseases and spreading corruption as dutifully as they once lived their human lives. It's a hideous fate, an afterlife of monotonous malice, your former self erased, your existence reduced to an anthropomorphic pestilence whose only purpose is to help catalog and propagate the very sickness that killed you. Some salvation, huh? Your soul becomes just another ingredient in Nurgle's cauldron. It's the ultimate violation. He doesn't just kill you, he harvests you and brews you into something foul to serve him. He doesn't let your essence rest. He repurposes it as one more droning daemon in his endless parade of rot. All right, perhaps you're thinking, well, those are common mortals or lowly cultists. What about Nurgle's mightiest champions? Surely he shows them some genuine affection? A fair question. Let's examine one of Nurgle's most legendary servants, Mortarion, Primarch of the Death Guard. If anyone could claim to have Nurgle's favor, it's this demigod, one of the Emperor's own Gene sons turned traitor, now a demon prince and Nurgle's number one plague general. Mortarion is literally called the Prince of Decay. If Nurgle truly loved anyone, it would be Mortarion, right? Yet Mortarion's tale is one of betrayal, agony, and bitter servitude. During the Horus Heresy, Mortarion and his entire Death Guard Space Marine Legion sided with War Master Horus against the Emperor. They were proud, hardened warriors known for endurance. But on their voyage to Terra to join the final battles of that war, Mortarion's fleet became trapped in the warp. Unprotected, drifting helplessly, they were struck by an onslaught of supernatural disease, the work of Nurgle. This was the infamous Destroyer Plague. It was unlike anything even those transhuman Astartes had seen. Their armor's seals did nothing. Their superhuman physiology gave no immunity. One by one, the Death Guard fell ill. Imagine these 8-foot-tall, gene-forged warriors, normally immune to sickness, suddenly covered in buboes and weeping sores, their lungs filling with corpse fluid. They suffered excruciating pain that even their enhanced minds could not block. They endured days, weeks of this nightmare adrift in the Immaterium. No help, no escape. Mortarion, who had survived poisons on his toxic homeworld that would kill lesser men in a breath, found himself doubled over, powerless as his sons, his beloved legion, rotted alive around him. They screamed for release from the agony. Mortarion, prideful and defiant, refused to call on any Chaos power for help at first, but eventually even he was brought to his knees. When he had finally lost all hope, when he saw his sons melting into ooze and begging him to save them, Mortarion swallowed his pride. With no options left, he called out to Nurgle. He yielded. He offered himself, his legion, his very soul to the Plague God, if only the pain would stop. And Nurgle answered. In an instant, the pain flickered away. The Destroyer Plague stopped killing the Death God. It didn't vanish. It settled. Where agonized, dying Astartes had writhed moments before, now something else stood. Bloated, unliving yet undying plague marines, their power armor bloated and corroded, their flesh fused to ceramite, their bodies forever transformed by corruption. Mortarion himself was saved from death, and promptly rewarded by being turned into a horrifying demon prince. He became a towering skeletal figure with tattered demon wings and a scythe, forever bound to Nurgle as his immortal servant. The once proud Primarch was now effectively Nurgle's slave general, a puppet with mildewed wings. Nurgle had what he wanted. An entire legion of elite warriors pressed into his service, owing him their miserable continued existence. And Mortarion? Accounts say Mortarion howled as he underwent this ascension. An ironic term, since ascending to demonhood under Nurgle felt more like drowning in sewage and coming out the other side as a walking corpse with delusions of grandeur. He was now immortal, yes, but immortal in damnation. In the 10,000 years since, Mortarion and his Death God have fought countless battles for Nurgle, but what do they have to show for it? They infest the war-torn regions of the Eye of Terror, ruling over plague-ridden fiefdoms that are hellscapes by any measure. Mortarion has launched grand invasions, such as the recent plague wars against his resurrected brother Gilliman in Ultramar, only to ultimately slink back to his foetid daemon world after spreading his corruption. The pattern is always the same. The Death Guard leave behind worlds of rot and misery, but they do not win anything meaningful. The Imperium endures, fighting back and rebuilding, while Mortarion returns to his diseased kingdom unfulfilled. He gained unholy power, yes, but lost everything else, and even that power serves only Nurgle's whims. Mortarion is no closer to true freedom or satisfaction than he was the moment he fell. He simply continues existing as Nurgle's plague-ridden instrument, doing over and over what he once did out of desperation. If that isn't a cautionary tale, I don't know what is. A few of Mortarion's men, faced with that hellish choice during the Warp Plague, actually refused Nurgle's salvation. One such hero was Battle Captain Nathaniel Garrow of the Death Guard, who utterly rejected the Plague God's offer. As his comrades gave in to despair and corruption, Garrow and a handful of like-minded loyalists fought their way clear of the diseased fleet and escaped to warn the Imperium. Garrow chose to endure suffering and remain untainted rather than live as Nurgle's puppet, and he paid for it with grievous injuries and a life in exile. But to him, even a painful life true to himself was better than an eternity as a plaything of Nurgle. Garrow's defiance proved that Nurgle's gifts are not irresistible. A strong spirit can spit in the plague god's eye, though it may cost everything. Of course, Nurgle took great delight in punishing the vast majority who did falter, Garrow's former brothers, using them to spread misery in ways the loyal captain would never have allowed. And what of Mortarion now? 10,000 standard years since he sold his soul. He and his Death Guard still wage Nurgle's wars, but their conquests are bleak and hollow. They claim dominion over plague-racked wastelands within the Eye of Terror, diseased demon worlds, and cancerous space hulks. Yet these bring them no glory or joy. Mortarion has periodically emerged to launch grand attacks like the plague wars in Ultramar, only to ultimately retreat after spreading his corruption. The Imperium, battered but unbroken, pushes his forces back each time. The Death Guard leave behind planets drenched in rot. Yes, but they achieve no lasting victory. The Emperor's realm still stands, while Mortarion returns to his fouetted kingdom empty-handed. In truth, the Death Guard's existence is stagnant, a bitter irony for the Legion once dedicated to endurance. Mortarion gained immortality and power, but at the cost of his pride, his freedom, and arguably even his purpose beyond serving Nurgle. He remains a pariah, feared, reviled, but ultimately pitied, bound to a master who will never truly reward him. It's hard to imagine he's happy with that outcome, if a demon can even feel happiness. More likely, he's a boiling mass of resentment and self-loathing under all that plague, exactly what Nurgle wants. But again, let's examine another of Nurgle's favorites, Typhus, Herald of Nurgle. Typhus, formerly Kalas Typhon, was Mortarion's first captain, and he secretly embraced Nurgle even before Mortarion did. In fact, it was Typhus who orchestrated the Death Guard's fateful trap in the warp. He sabotaged the fleet's warp engines and killed their navigators, leaving them adrift and ensuring Nurgle's plague would consume them. Typhus was already Nurgle's inside man. When the destroyer plague struck the Death Guard, Typhus alone was ready. He welcomed it. As the Legion lay dying, Nurgle rewarded Typhus for his loyalty by making him the host of that very plague. Typhon's body became host to an enormous pestilence. His armor cracked with the infestation of the Destroyer Hive, a colony of unnatural plague insects that now pours from him at will. He was Typhon no longer. He became Typhus, a monstrous vector of contagion, Nurgle's champion. Typhus is basically the equivalent of Nurgle's favorite attack dog. He's let off his leash to go ravage Imperial sectors with disease, then he returns wagging his tail, perhaps literally if a Nurgling hasn't chewed it off, to Grandfather for approval. If he ever fails or displeases Nurgle, you can bet Nurgle's affection would turn to wrath in an instant. Chaos gods reward success and mercilessly punish failure. Typhus stays in Nurgle's good graces because he's exceedingly good at what he does, and vile beyond measure. But don't think for a second that Typhus is loved. He's just particularly useful. If he ceased to be useful, Nurgle would discard or mutate him like any other pawn. In the meantime, Typhus's reward for loyalty has been to become something arguably less than human. He's more pestilence than person now, a walking plague colony. Perhaps Typhus revels in it. He scarcely resembles the man he once was, his will completely devoted to Nurgle's cause. But call it love? Hardly. It's the relationship of master and attack dog, nothing more. In fact, Typhus has left a trail of devastation across the galaxy that exemplifies Nurgle's style of warfare. During one infamous campaign, not long before the 13th Black Crusade, Typhus deliberately spread a manufactured super plague known as the Curse of Unbelief throughout several sectors around Cadia. Imperial authorities watched in horror as drifting space hulks emerged from the warp bearing that curse. Entire ships whose crews were dead and putrefied, but then rose again as plague zombies. Hive world after hive world went dark as the contagion spread. Within months, dozens of planets were overrun by walking corpses. The Imperium quarantined system after system, but the contagion outpaced containment, and panic accelerated its spread. By the time Typhus's plague fleet arrived in force, resistance on many worlds had already collapsed under waves of the infected. Typhus and his traitor, Astartes, descended upon plague-racked planets that could barely fight back. Their defenders had died retching in their trenches, or were themselves shambling monstrosities. This is Nurgle's way of war. Why batter down fortress walls when disease can seep through every crack and lay the defenders low from within? Typhus understands this well. Every world he reaps for Nurgle is a testament to the notion that plague can achieve what legions sometimes cannot. Of course, Typhus revels in the carnage, but consider what that says about Nurgle. He achieves victory by turning both his enemies and his own followers into mindless husks. Only a being that holds utter contempt for living souls would choose a method of war that annihilates everyone involved just to glorify decay. For those who must face Nurgle's forces in battle, the experience is nothing short of nightmarish. Imperial guardsmen, simple human soldiers, have emptied entire magazines into plague zombies, only to see the diseased horrors stumble forward until literally dismembered. Even elite space marines struggle against Nurgle's chosen. Loyal Astartes report that corrupted plague marines can wade through bolter fire that would obliterate normal foes. A plague marine might take dozens of direct hits, his power armor cracked and oozing foul fluids, yet still keep advancing, firing back as if pain does not exist, because for him it truly doesn't. It unnerves even the bravest warriors to see an enemy who should be dead continue fighting. Intestines hanging out, half a head blown off, and it doesn't stop him. How do you kill an opponent who has already rotted past the point of death? The answer: with great difficulty and at high cost. Many times, Nurgle's champions have closed to melee range despite overwhelming defensive fire, simply because their decayed bodies are too numb to feel injury and too fueled by dark power to be stopped by conventional means. Those same bodies exude toxic clouds and swarms of unnatural vermin that choke the air and foul the ground underfoot. Entire regiments have fallen, not because they broke and ran, but because Nurgle's infections tore through their ranks even as they stood and fought. It's combat against death itself, a fight the plague god loves, because even if his forces are destroyed, they spread despair in the process. And when they win, the battlefield becomes a reeking charnel pit, another victory for decay. Even Xenos species are not spared. Orcs, brutish and hardy by nature, have been laid low by Nurgle's poxes that turn even their resilient fungal flesh into slimy mush. The Necrons, those living machines, have found their metal bodies mysteriously corroding when Nurgle's influence seeps into a tomb world, their superhuman alloys rusting and clogging with no logical explanation. And the Tyranids, extragalactic swarms that devour all life, have learned to shun planets heavily tainted by Nurgle, for the Great Devourer gains nothing from consuming plague-ridden biomass. Indeed, doing so can infect and destabilize the Hive Fleet itself. Nurgle's foul reach extends to every corner of the galaxy and every form of life. None can claim immunity from his touch. Consider, too, to the lesser-known minions among Nurgle's followers. There are Chaos Space Marine warbands like the Purge, known for extreme nihilism. They literally seek to exterminate all life wherever they go, believing that the galaxy must be purged of the corruption of life itself, so that only the purity of death remains. In their twisted theology, this is a mercy. They have, for instance, reduced verdant civilizations to silent wastelands in their crusade to save every soul from the pain of existence, a ghastly mercy killing of entire planets. That's Nurgle's influence taken to its logical extreme, delivering peace through total genocide. The Purge and warbands like them demonstrate that serving Nurgle ultimately means hating everything, even the living beings you once swore to protect. It's indiscriminate destruction, wearing the mask of deliverance. One illustrative case: on the industrial world of Vantor, a hive city of tens of millions was struck by a plague called the Weeping Pox, so named because its victims' eyes and pores wept blood and infectious ichor. It began subtly. A few factory workers fell ill with a terrible fever. Within a standard month, entire manufacturing districts were quarantined as the disease ran rampant. Survivors later recounted how the hive's lower levels became an abyss of misery. Corpses lay three deep in the hab-block corridors. Fever-crazed victims wandered about, smearing blood on the walls. And a thick green haze of rot hung over every avenue. As civil authority collapsed, some terrified citizens actually started praying to the plague, imagining it a divine punishment or test, inadvertently empowering Nurgle even further. By the time the Imperial Navy arrived to contain the outbreak, Hive Vantor had essentially become a garden of Nurgle on that planet. The Inquisition deemed the entire city lost and subjected it to exterminatus-level cleansing. Orbital bombardments and incendiary virus bombs rained down, wiping out the Hive and everyone in it, an appalling sacrifice of millions of lives, just to halt Nurgle's contagion from spreading off-world. That is the scale of horror the Plague God brings. An entire metropolis reduced to a putrid ruin, and then to ash. And somewhere in the warp, Grandfather Nurgle surely chuckled, pleased at the despair and destruction wrought in his name. Nurgle's obsession with plague is so great that even his demons act like statisticians of suffering. One of his greater demons, a corpulent, sagely great unclean one called Epidemius, is tasked with tallying up every plague and its death toll, aided by countless lesser demons called plague bearers, who monotonously count infections like demonic clerks. Epidemius dutifully records each pandemic's casualties, maintaining a grotesque ledger of misery to report to Nurgle. It's said that each plague bearer in Nurgle's realm carries an abacus or scroll and is compelled to drone out the numbers of the diseased. If one loses count, they must start over from zero, a comically cruel task, given Nurgle never runs out of new plagues. That's the kind of industry Nurgle values. Not art, not progress, but an endless catalog of suffering. And where does this dreadful cataloging happen? In Nurgle's own realm, the so-called Garden of Nurgle in the Warp. Unlike what you might imagine of a hellscape, Nurgle's domain is not a barren wasteland, but a macabre paradise of pestilence. Under a sickly yellow-gray sky, buzzing with flies, stretches an endless garden of horrors. Twisted, rotten trees entangled with parasitic vines cover the landscape, their branches dripping slime instead of sap. Mushrooms the size of buildings sprout from ground composed of thick, rancid muck and mulch, the decaying detritus of uncounted civilizations. Everywhere, insects swarm in clouds so dense they blot out what passes for sunlight. The air is rank with the sweet, cloying scent of rot in full bloom. At the center of this nightmare garden stands Nurgle's manse, an enormous crumbling ruin overgrown with glowing fungus and dripping sludge. Inside, Nurgle himself toils eternally at a vast iron cauldron, brewing new contagions. The sound of his joyful labor, wet, clanging stirrings and phlegmy humming, echoes across the diseased landscape. All around him cavort his demons, giggling nurglings splash in filth like children in puddles. Rotund beasts of Nurgle wag their tails, or tentacles, excitedly as they slither after one another in endless play. Towering great unclean ones, basically smaller copies of Nurgle's own form, lumber about tending to demonic gardens of fungal flowers and bubonic boils. It's a mockery of life, lively and colorful in its way, but all built on death and decay. In this garden sits one prisoner, the Eldar goddess Isha. Nurgle actually keeps a deity in a cage, literally. According to Eldar myth and Imperial Xenotheologists, during the fall of the Eldar, when the Eldar gods were being slaughtered by the newborn Slaanesh, Nurgle rescued Isha from the clutches of the Prince of Pleasure. Isha is the Eldar goddess of healing, fertility, and life, everything Nurgle is not, yet ironically tied to what he claims dominion over, disease and healing being two sides of a coin. Some say Nurgle saved Isha from being devoured by Slaanesh out of some sick affection. Others suggest he simply wanted a useful test subject for his diseases. Either way, he imprisoned her in his warp garden. But what does he do with her? He keeps Isha in a rusted cage in his cauldron chamber. It's said that whenever Nurgle concocts a particularly delectable new plague in his cauldron, he ladles some out and force-feeds it to Isha. He watches with glee to see its effects on a living goddess. Isha, being a deity of healing, survives these infections. She regenerates from even the worst toxins, which only means Nurgle can test another and another, eternally. When he treats her to a brew that makes her skin slough off or her divine lungs fill with maggots, he claps his hands in delight, taking notes as she suffers before ultimately recovering, thanks to her own powers. It's Nurgle's favorite science experiment. It's a relationship straight out of a horror story, the captive goddess and her grotesque tormentor who insists he's showing love in his own cruel way. Nurgle indeed claims to adore Isha in his twisted, possessive manner, but it's the kind of affection that any sane being would recognize as abuse. He quite literally cannot comprehend love except as possession and control. He imagines that by keeping Isha locked up eternally and subjecting her to every sickness imaginable, he's showing devotion. Because to him, sharing his plagues is showing devotion. It's pathetic in one sense, a god so utterly loveless that he thinks torture will make someone love him. And yet it's beyond mere pity, it's outright evil. This is how Nurgle treats a goddess he supposedly cares about. If that's what he does to his beloved Isha, guess what kind of love a mortal can expect from him? To the Eldar, Isha's plight is a tragedy of cosmic proportions, and so far, none of their efforts to free her have succeeded. It is said that Eldar seers and warriors have tried to penetrate Nurgle's realm to rescue their goddess, but all have been lost to the garden's clutches. One spirit seer conclave on a craft world attempted an ambitious psychic journey to reach Isha's prison, only to have their souls consumed by Nurgle's domain like moths in a toxic fee. Their noble sacrifice merely delivered more victims to Nurgle's collection. Such is the fate of any who trespass in the plague god's land. Now, if that's the fate of a goddess in Nurgle's grasp, consider what it means for mere mortals. Nurgle's garden isn't a sanctuary for his followers. It's more like a grotesque farm or an amusement park of despair. Mortals who devote themselves fully and die in his name might find their souls pulled into that garden, yes, but not to frolic in paradise. Perhaps they're reshaped into one of his myriad demons, or planted as a sentient fungus in a corner of the garden, awareness forever trapped in a quivering mold patch. Who knows? The garden is alive with things that shouldn't live, each likely housing the spiritual dregs of once living beings who gave themselves to Nurgle. If any follower expected a blissful afterlife frolicking with kindly grandfather in a field of flowers, well, they'll be horrified. The only flowers in Nurgle's realm are corpse lilies that bloom from cadavers and pustule pods that burst with flies. Even existence in the garden for demons is precarious. Nurgle has moods. Remember how I described him as jolly? He is, most of the time. But even Nurgle gets depressed or angry, especially when his plots are thwarted, or the other chaos gods outmaneuver him in their endless, great game of rivalry. What does he do when he's feeling down? He finds something small and crushes it for fun. There's an old legend that when Nurgle is down in the dumps, he shambles off to a certain foetid lake in his realm. And there, he spends time squashing his own lesser demons under his enormous, filth-caked feet. Pop, pop, pop. Each burst of a plague-filled critter underfoot lifts Grandpa Nurgle's spirits a bit, apparently. The specific victims in the tale are the plague toads, woeful, rot-bloated amphibious demons. Supposedly, when Nurgle's feeling blue, he'll stomp a few plague toads flat, just to enjoy the splatter of bile and the funny squeal they make. It cheers him right up. Meanwhile, all the surviving plague toads in the vicinity feel the ground shake and desperately hop away in terror, knowing their loving patron is on a rampage. Some even escape to the mortal world at the first chance, rather than stay in the garden with that merry psychopath. Again, a charming anecdote about the character of this god. One minute he calls his demons and followers his dear children, and the next, he's literally crushing them because it makes him smile. If you were a plague toad, or any Nurgle servant, what conclusion would you draw? Nurgle's affection is conditional and arbitrary. Cross him, fail him, or simply be nearby when he's in a bad mood, and you're not a cherished child. You're target practice. This holds true across the board. The Chaos Gods are all horrifying in their own ways, but Nurgle masks his malice under a veneer of familial warmth that makes it arguably even more treacherous. Khorne will openly demand blood and skulls. Slaanesh will tempt you with excess until you burn out. Tzintch will ensnare you in layers of deceit. But only Nurgle will smile fondly at you the whole time you're dissolving in his embrace. So, let's drive the point home with clarity. Nurgle doesn't love you. He hates you, because in truth, Nurgle hates life itself. He is the antithesis of everything beautiful or aspirational about living. He is misery refined into godhood. If you are suffering, he doesn't want to truly alleviate that suffering. He wants to use it. If you fear death, he doesn't guide you to peace. He exploits your fear to make you an agent of death. If you're lonely and broken, he doesn't genuinely heal you or offer healthy companionship. He makes you part of his grotesque carnival, so you forget what real companionship ever felt like. When Nurgle's forces invade a world, what do? They don't set up soup kitchens or hospitals to show grandfather's compassion. No. They unload cauldrons of filth, pour contagion into the water supply, unleash swarms of demon flies to spread epidemics. They want the world to break so completely that the population, in despair, turns to Nurgle or simply dies fueling his power. During the recent plague wars on Ultramar, for instance, the Death Guard didn't invade to conquer territory in a strategic sense. They came to corrupt. They transformed once beautiful agri-worlds into pestilent bogs. On the garden world of Iax, Ultramar's chief hospital planet, Mortarion unleashed such horrific plagues that the world was renamed Pestiliax, as it literally merged with Nurgle's warp garden. Iax became a garden of Nurgle in real space. Its forests turned to dripping fungal swamps, its fields crawling with slime and insects, its great hospital spires overrun with unholy boils and living diseases. Billions died in gibbering torment, or were turned into giggling poxwalkers, those mindless plague zombies that trail Nurgle's armies. The Primarch Gilliman, a demigod in his own right, nearly succumbed to a tailor-made plague called the God Blight, which Mortarion bragged was potent enough to kill even a son of the Emperor. That's right. Nurgle cooked up a disease specifically to assassinate one of humanity's greatest warriors, purely out of spite. And he almost succeeded. It took literal divine intervention through the Emperor's power to save Gilliman. the aftermath of that war. Worlds left shattered, soaked in rotten slurry. The human populations that once lived there, either dead or suffering fates worse than death. And Nurgle's servants exulted at this outcome. They considered it a grand victory for their loving patron to have blessed Ultramar with so much decay. Again, is this love? To turn thriving worlds into charnel pits, to kill or enslave every soul on them in misery. Only a mind completely perverted by chaos could stretch the definition of love that far. Perhaps the final cruel truth about Nurgle's relationship with his followers is this. He doesn't even acknowledge their individuality enough to actively hate them with personal malice. In a sense, to Nurgle, mortals are like lab rats or crops. You don't hate or love each individual fly when you're the Lord of the Flies. You just enjoy that there are many flies buzzing around your banquet of rot. If one fly, follower, fails or bores him, he swats it aside without a second thought. Not out of focused hatred, but out of casual cruelty. The opposite of love isn't always active hatred. Sometimes it's indifference. Nurgle is cosmically indifferent to the suffering of his own children. He cares only insofar as their pain and despair serve to feed his power. He's not sitting on his throne twirling a mustache thinking, "I really despise Bob. My cultist in Sector 7G, I'm going to ruin his day specifically." Bob isn't that important. Bob's just fuel. If Bob screams for mercy, Nurgle probably just hears a pleasing sound or a funny joke. If Bob stops being entertaining, say Bob dies too quickly or escapes his clutches, Nurgle just shrugs and moves on to the next victim. That utter disregard for the individual is perhaps the ultimate form of hate, the kind where you're not even seen as a person, just as stuff. So where does that leave us? It's simple. Do not be fooled by the propaganda of the plague cults. Grandfather Nurgle is not your friend. He's not a kindly grandpa who wants you to accept the circle of life and feel all warm about decay. He's a grand manipulator, a cosmic parasite that feeds on suffering and grows bloated from it. He'll smile and hug you, and in the same motion, push you into the abyss. In the 41st millennium, countless trillions face horrifying fates daily. War, starvation, extermination. But falling to Nurgle might be the cruelest fate of all, because it makes a sick parody of hope and solace. It's a trap that violates not just your body, but the very meaning of love and comfort. It corrupts those concepts into something grotesque. Nurgle doesn't love you. He never did, and he never will. He only loves what he can turn you into, another broken toy tossed on the heap in his ghoulish playground. His embrace might shield you from fear and pain for a time, but only by making you an instrument of fear and pain for others. He will take everything bright and human in you and replace it with rot, and he'll call it a gift. As we conclude this grim journey, remember this above all. In Nurgle's embrace, any comfort is a lie. Any laughter is at your expense. The only thing that truly thrives is the decay he represents. If you ever find yourself at the end of all hope, tempted to whisper a plea to the plague god for relief, know that you are inviting a fate far worse than an honest death. You are inviting corruption into your very soul. Better to fight on, to resist despair, even if death is the price, because an honorable death at least is your own. Life under Nurgle's thumb is not truly life at all, just unending decay. So the next time someone jokes, "Papa Nurgle loves you," or you see some deranged cultist grinning through a boil-covered face and preaching Nurgle's gospel, remember what that really means. It means agony masked as laughter, slavery sold as salvation. It means a fate I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. Well, except maybe on those very cultists themselves, as poetic justice. If you still harbor any doubt, consider what existence as one of Nurgle's chosen truly entails in the long run. It is not a glorious eternity of empowerment. It's an endless descent into living death. Your flesh will continue to rot away, but cruelly you won't die from it. You'll just exist in perpetual decomposition. Your senses will dull and your pain will numb, but so will all your joy, your memory, your identity. Eventually, you won't even recall what it felt like to be human, to feel love or hope or anything besides an all-encompassing resignation. You'll trudge along as a shell of yourself, performing Nurgle's bidding automatically. Maybe you'll dimly smile as another tumor bursts from your ruined body, or chuckle mindlessly when a plague claims a new victim. But that isn't happiness or even madness. It's just emptiness wearing a grin. That is the final reward Nurgle gives his followers, to become a hollow mockery of life forever. In the end, Nurgle's affection is a poisoned chalice. Don't drink from it. Nurgle doesn't love you. Nurgle hates you, and if you give him the chance, he will make you hate yourself and everything you once held dear, right up until you drown in your own filth, just another wasted pawn of chaos. That is the miserable truth behind the lie of Grandfather Nurgle's love. In the grim darkness of the far future, there is no love. Not from the darkness, at least. Certainly not from Nurgle. He will smile as he destroys you and call it kindness. You must see through that rancid mirage, cling to true hope, fight for genuine solace, and reject Nurgle's embrace with every fiber of your being. To succumb to him is not deliverance. It is damnation by the slowest, foulest means imaginable. Remember, Nurgle doesn't love you. He never has. He never will. And that realization, stark and terrifying, might just save your life and your soul one day.